You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. You know, every organization has to have a problem child.
Yeah.
Joining us is our problem child, Michael Musselman. What's your deal, man? Why are you always UA? You're like, oh, I've been on the phone with my doctor for 2.5 hours. What could you do on the phone with a doctor for 2.5 hours? You were sexting.
Well, actually,
were you sexting?
No, it was. I don't know how to sext. I don't know what that means.
You're a former enlisted Marine. You'll figure it out. Trust me.
No, I was a choir boy when I was enlisted Marine.
Yeah. I've heard the story about missing the Marine Corps ball because you were practicing choir. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. Argentina model. An Argentine model.
Keep going, choir boy. News headlines from the news headlines for the Washington Post. For the first time, the Marine Corps expects to have a female infantry officer among its ranks. By Dan Lamothe.
No.
The one you're talking about is a Mortarman. I checked.
Oh, as a lieutenant?
No. Somebody got their wires crossed.
No.
Yes.
The source I got it from was the head honcho.
Misinformed.
Yeah. Bullshit.
I'm telling you.
She's already there.
Let me just read you. This is the newsflash, man.
This is so true.
The Marine Corps expects to have its first female infantry officer, a historic first following her anticipated graduation Monday from the service's grueling infantry officer course, said three military officials with knowledge of the training. The lieutenant and her male colleagues completed a three-week combat exercise at the service's training center in 29 Palms, California on Wednesday, the final graded requirement in a 13-week program. The infantry course is widely seen as some of the toughest training in the military, with about 25% of all students washing out. The class will mark its graduation Monday with a warrior breakfast 35 miles south of Washington in Quantico, Virginia, where most of the course is conducted. All three spoke to the Washington Post on the condition of anonymity because the graduation has not yet occurred. All that remains now, between now and this and then, is returning equipment used during training and a few administrative days. So whoever she is, congratulations. The historic moment arrives nearly 2 years after Defense Secretary Ash Carter lifted the military's last remaining restriction for women, part of an effort by the Obama administration to make the armed forces fully inclusive. Officials shared few details about the lieutenant Thursday, and two said it is unlikely that she will agree to do any media interviews, preferring to be, quote, a quiet professional and just do her job.
Fucking hoorah. They got the right one.
Yeah. You know what? And as we said the other day, congratulations to her. Go rip it up.
Yeah. I wish you all the luck.
Yeah. No.
But, because it could have been the opposite. It could have been this girl with Bravo TV cameras falling behind her trying to get a reality TV show out of it. And then really destroying everything, you know.
let me tell you.
But, yeah.
You got to really want a reality TV show to go through that shit. Because, let me tell you, that is not easy. That course, it's a ball buster. Physically, we'll test you.
Yeah, whatever.
And always has. So anyway, and you know what? And the chief of staff of the White House, he's one of the ones who created the modern version of it. So there you have it.
Hey, Matt, what? Guess what?
Now, hold on.
Back
to our problem child. Yes, Mike.
I have an IOC graduation certificate as well.
I know you're a badass.
It wasn't hard at all, because you know how many days I actually was in IOC? Zero. We were doing our own program.
Why does that not surprise me? I know. You talk.
Yeah, I got an IOC graduation certificate. I'm a grad from IOC.
When we were talking about going through boot camp and Mike's experience, one of the things Mike said was, Yeah, you know, we got to about the eighth week, and I thought, what's the big deal about this place? I don't get
eighth it. Week? Wasn't that long. Wasn't that stupid.
I don't get it. What's all the commotion about this place, man?
What's all the hoopla? That thing.
Not that difficult. Nice.
Yeah, my drill instructors were drunks. They come back staggering from the E-Club. You know, what it taught me was when you're in the herd, stay in the middle of the herd.
Right.
When you're on the peripheral, that's where you're going to get bit.
And what's the rule on the periphery? Don't make eye contact.
Don't make eye contact. I was teaching women yesterday, and then we talked about that, and I gave that example. I said, you know, you would about abnormal behavior. When you see abnormal behavior is like, one of the things we talk about is when you're a child and you get in trouble with your parents, you don't turn your head to see where mom and dad are at, right? You turn your eyes. You just kind of look out of the corner of your eyes, right? Because you don't want to make eye contact. You don't want to let them know that, hey, you're looking at them. So you look out of the corner of your eyes. And that's what boot camp was about. You never turned your head, but you just looked out of the corner of your eyes like, where's he at? I don't see him. Oh, there he is. He's coming down the line. Okay. Eyes straightforward, you know? Because God forbid you got caught looking at him. And it was game on, boys.
What'd you say?
Sands of Iwo Jima, as they called it. It was a big sand pit right outside of my barracks with a pull-up bar underneath.
You're gonna go out there and get a little bit of your own Mount Suribachi, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the drill instructors would always threaten us and say, you ain't leaving this pit, boys, until your pockets are full of sand. So in between of our jumping jacks and our motherfuckers and our monkey fuckers, we'd be throwing sand in our cargo pockets, trying to fill them up. He was never going to let us go. He was just watching how stupid we were.
Hey, could you define some of those things for people that are listening? Monkey fuckers. Yeah, define those terms you just used.
Okay, a monkey fucker is, if you're standing straight up, crouch or, you know, go straight down and grab your ankles with your hands and then go up and down, up and down, up and down. Don't let go of your ankle, but go up as high as you can go and then back down. Those are monkey fuckers.
Okay. What was the other one you used?
Bodybuilders, bends and thrusts. Bends and thrusts are easy, man. Everybody knows what a bends and thrusts are.
Yeah, but you call them bending motherfuckers.
Yeah, because we were like, everything was, had the word motherfucker at the end of it, though, at the end of the boot camp.
There you go. All right, but really, but not a big deal to you? You seem to have processed it pretty easily, yes?
Yeah, it was, you know, there were times, Mac, there was some funny-ass shit, man. We'd set up the mini grinder, you know, because when it was really kind of just bullshit outside, or the drill instructors wanted to be completely sadistic and not be caught, they'd set up the mini grinder. So they'd come out and go, set up the mini grinder, sir, set up the mini grinder, aye aye, sir. And then everybody go do their thing. You'd move all the racks, you'd make a big space, and everybody put their foot locker up against the side wall, you know, so he had an elevated platform like a catwalk.
Right.
So one day we're doing the set up the mini grinder, sir, set up the mini grinder, aye, sir. And we're doing this, you know, and then they screw with you. Stop, freeze, freeze, sir. You know, you'd stand there, if you could see this, we would do stuff because this is, you know, we're now trying to have fun. So you'd be like in mid-step, like, you know, your foot would still be off the ground and your mouth would still be open, you know. Like you're frozen in time. And they see that, and they get pissed off. But we'd have fun. But so one day we're doing the mini grinder, and he's walking around on top yelling at us. Rah, rah, rah. We're doing, like, inspection arms or something, you know. And just as we screw up, he stomps his foot, and it goes right through a footlocker. Right? And now he's trapped. He's trapped. Yeah, his shoe goes right through this footlocker. And he's, you know, I'm looking at him, he's like, holy shit. And he's pissed more, and he's pulling it out. And he's bleeding now from the wood cutting him. I mean, it's just and he's losing it. and this is the worst one. This drill instructor was the worst drill instructor to do this to. He was Sergeant Smith, Force Recon guy, had a scar across his face from when he jumped out of an airplane, had to cut his boots. Yeah. Guy's just, ugh. And he's just always had a scowl. I mean, he just hated everybody, you know? And so his foot stuck, he's pulling out. Finally, he gets a three, and he picks up his foot locker, and he goes, who the fuck just booby trapped me? And he looks at it, and he goes, muscle man! And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. So I go running up to him. That's he's awesome. Like, why did you do this to me? You're trying to kill me, muscle man! You know, I'm like, sir, no, sir, what did I do to you, muscle man? Sir, nothing, sir! You know, oh, God. And then, so I'm dying. He's killing me in the, you know, in the front, making me do the monkey puckers, bends and thrusts. And then Sergeant Jones, black guy, comes out. And Sergeant Jones had a shtick. His shtick was, and I didn't realize it until much later in boot camp, he talked real slow. And he was from Alabama. So he talked like this, real slow. Come here, private. I'm going to kill you today. You know, real slow. But that was a shtick because I found out later I was doing like a thing and I was, you know, like a moving boxes from one part to the other, like a working part. And I'm walking by and there's Sean Jones on the basketball field, or on the basketball, playing basketball with his original fingers. And he's like, yo, come on, man. Blah, 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 blah. And he's talking really fast and he's like moving real fast. And he sees me and he goes to his drill instructors. He goes, be right back. He runs over to me and he goes, erase in your mind what you just saw, private. Yes, sir. Sir, yes, sir. He goes, if you tell anybody what you just saw, I'm going to kill you. Yes, sir, yes, sir. So I get back and I tell my close buddy, you know, like, dude, Sergeant Jones talks different and he's really fast. Whereas around us, he's like walks real slow, talks real slow. So then just for shits and giggles, Sergeant Jones goes and changes. He's in his Chucks, his Charlies. He comes walking down the quarter deck, and he's like, Muscleman, come here. I walk over, sir, yes, sir. He goes, get down, push-ups, begin. So I start pushing up, and I'm like, what did I do? So he looks down, and he goes, did you tell anybody? Sir, yes, sir. He's like, who'd you tell? I told my bunkmate, sir. You know, he's like, Rafferty, get over here. So he rapidly comes over, did Muscleman tell you? You know, and so now he doesn't know. And I did tell him. He goes, did Muscleman tell you anything about me? Sure, no, sure. Because I told him, don't tell him, you know. So he's being, now he's holding up his end of the deal. And he goes, he didn't tell you anything? Sure, no, sure. He's like, either you're lying or he's lying. Someone's lying to me. He goes, get down there. So then Rafferty's pushing up and he goes, did you tell him anything? I said, I told him, I told you. He's like, you fucker, you just screwed me, you know. Oh man, it was so funny. You know, so finally after we're done, he goes, did Muscleman tell you anything? Sir, yes, sir. What did he tell you? Sir, you talk really fast. And you know, and you can see him kind of like, he goes, that's it? He goes, he said you got really good moves on the basketball field. You know, the basketball court. I was cracking up, man. I was dying inside. Then he killed us some more and then we got to go back. But, you know, Jones turned out to be a really good dude. You know, afterwards, he came up to us and he was just like, you know, one of the boys, you know, congratulations. I really want to tell you guys, you know, it just changed, you know, right. Where Smith never,
and oh, really?
I saw him much later. Yeah. I was a corporal and he was still a sergeant and I saw him, you know, and I was like scared to death of him when I saw him. Right. And then I was like, wait a second, he's just a sergeant, you know, I'm a corporal now. So I went up and talked to him and I'm like, hey, Sergeant Smith, how you doing? I said, you don't remember me, but I was in your platoon. Get the fuck away from me. And I'm like, hey, chill out, pal. You know? And he's still the same way. Like, I'm like, whatever, dude. You know, you're going to die alone one day. I know it.
Here I'm trying to reach out to you and be your friend.
Yeah. I'm trying to make amends, dude. And you're being like this? Screw you.
I'm trying to make amends for your shitty behavior. And this is what you're going to give
me? Dude,
that
guy would come back. This is how you know. This is what we were like at boot camp. And you know, this is some of my regrets. So you'd see Sergeant Smith come back from the club, and I forget the name of the club on MCRD. So you'd be on fire watch, right? And you'd be sitting there walking your post with like a flashlight, a moonbeam, a crooked neck moonbeam, and that was the only thing you had to defend yourself with.
Right.
So I looked across one day, and there comes Sarge Smith, and he's staggering across the parade deck coming back to the club with his charlie's on and his campaign color. And he's walking diagonal, you know, like he's telemarketing, skiing up a hill, right? Going back and forth. And I'm like, oh, shit. So I look at the time, and luckily it's 5 minutes before I'm getting up. So I go wake up my relief. Hey, man, wake up. You got this? He's like, yeah, let me get dressed. He's getting dressed. He's still groggy. And literally, Sergeant Smith walks through the threshold at exactly like 1 a.m. when I got off. And I looked at my guy who did it. He's putting his cover on, that's the last thing. He puts the culture belt on. You know, now he's assuming duty. I said, you got it? He's like, yeah. I jumped in the rack with everything on. You know, I didn't even take him closer. Slayed there like I was dead. Totally still, not even breathing. And then all of a sudden I heard, Firewatch! He comes running over there. He's like, sir, Firewatch reporting his order, sir. Get in the whiskey locker, boy. Sir, get in the whiskey locker. Aye, sir. And you go in the whiskey locker and you hear him get thrashed, bottle breaking as the MNU falls off the thing. You're like, oh, I feel so bad for him. But really, I don't.
Yeah, could be me.
Technically, it's 1 minute past. Yeah, it could be me.
Could be
but
me.
Technically, it's 1 minute past. So he does have duty. Yeah.
He deserved it.
He is the duty. Yeah. But, oh, my God. We'd sit there, you know, be like, there was one time, I don't know if it's true or not, but a buddy of mine was telling me a story when we were in boot camp. And he was my sister platoon. And he had a drill instructor same kind of way. His name was Staff Sergeant Hennessy. And Hennessy was also a Force Recon Marine. You know, you kind of start thinking, man, Force Recon Marine has just got no friends. But this Force Recon guy, Hennessy, same way Smith was. You get drunk, come back, beat up drill or the fire watch, just kill him. And so one day he said, I'm on fire watch, and I see Hennessy walking across the parade deck. And I look, and I got 20 minutes left on the clock. I go, what'd you do? He goes, man, I feel so bad. I pulled the chair up, grabbed that plastic clock down, and turned the minute hand to the hour. And then woke up my relief and then watched him get slayed by his Staff Sergeant Hennessy when he walked through the door. And then the next day, the drill instructor noticed the time was off and then thrashed all of us. And then he goes, then my buddy, who I did this to, looks over at me from across the room as we're doing bends and thrusts. He just gave me this look like, all right, son of a bitch, I got it now. You know, because he's like, this clock is 20 minutes fast. You're all going to pay for this. And then it clicks in this kid's head like, 20 minutes fast? Wait a second. I got slayed at, oh, okay. I know how this is working. Man, that was fun. There's some funny stories, you know?
There is. I was, I had.
Dude, we played Ghostbusters.
What?
Wait, there's last one. We played Ghostbusters before Ghostbusters even came out.
Explain.
As a movie.
Explain.
So when the drill instructors wanted to get, like, crazy, like, because, you know, in my day, when you went to boot camp, there was punishment, and it was corporal punishment, and it was handed down by your corporals and your sergeants, you know? And there was no such word as hazing. You couldn't go to your series commander and go, sir, I think I've been hazed. He'd thrash you. So one day, I don't know, out of the blue, dump your sea bags. And we had set up the mini grinder, right? And so they instructed us to take the sea bags and put them over our head. Like, wear them as a gown. So if you can imagine, I mean, I couldn't see this, but in my mind's eye, I was looking at this. You're looking at a platoon of Marines with their little legs, camouflage legs, sticking out of a green sea bag, running around.
They're recruits. They're not Marines.
Yeah, recruits. So you'd see these black boots, camouflage legs sticking out of a green bag, running around. And that green bag would go almost down to your knees, dude. So you couldn't use your arms. You couldn't do like a full-on sprint. But you were wearing like a tube sock running around. And you couldn't see anything. Everything was dark. But it was for their amusement.
And let me tell you, the best part is like, so like, when stupid people amuse themselves, right? What's that thing you say, Mike? Stupid something? Get stupid games? What did you say?
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
There you go. There you go. This group of people comes up with things like that, okay? And but the stuff they like conceive, it's legitimately funny. Okay. Now you can make fun of it and all the rest of it, but it is legitimately funny.
Yeah, it didn't hurt. I mean, I wasn't hurt by it.
Come on. Yeah,
no, it was funny.
No, and the hazing, they were not. It wasn't hazing. It was just those were initiations. They were like Marine Corps traditions, and it was just what you went through. And if you were to cheese out of it or something like that, you were ostracized. It was not pretty. That's why. And everybody went through them.
And you know what a ghost turd is?
The ghost turd.
You know what a ghost turd is, right?
No.
You guys didn't have ghost turds in IOC or OCS?
No, I don't know. I don't
know.
I'm
sure you did.
No, I don't know what it
is. You know, okay, when dust and lint or, you know, dog hair kind of gets all together and makes that little spiral whitey see-through, that's called a ghost turd.
Okay.
So if you ever got caught with a ghost turd in your barracks or in your squad bay, oh, my God. So, you know, you'd see this, and those were funny. You know, you'd hear this, good God. You know, you hear this, good God. And you're like, oh, my God, what happened? What in the hell is this? Is this a ghost turd in my squad bay? You know, it'd be like, oh, man. And he'd hold up this little faint, little see-through, little fur ball of fuzz and lint and everything. It was probably about an inch long, blowing in the wind. And he's like, I found a goddamn ghost turd. And, you know, oh, talk about
the world. Oh. The world is upside down.
The world's ending.
Yeah. The world is upside
down.
For
a ghost turd.
You know what? I remember.
Oh, my wife, daughter. My daughter refers to, she sees him in the house. She's like, I'm going to go get the vacuum. I said, why? She goes, because there's no ghost turds in the hallway.
That's your family discussion. The I went to OCS in September, and I was there for Thanksgiving. So what they did was families in the area said that, you know, we'll take three candidates or whatever. So you went to their home, and you were hoping it was like somebody like Mike or somebody that would offer you a beer or something like that. You know, if they offer us a beer, what do we do?
I wouldn't. I'd make it clean my house.
So we go there, and these were very, very religious people, and they were really nice, but it was pretty boring, right? They had the TV off, and we were sitting around, like, looking at each other. So anyway, on the way back, we stop at 7-Eleven. We had to be back by 2200 or whatever, Thanksgiving evening. And so we stop at 7-Eleven, and I get this pack of M&Ms. And so then we get back to Brownfield at OCS, back in the old days, where the old building.
That's contraband.
So I was going to eat them. And so what I did was I wanted to go call my girlfriend at the time. And so I throw them in my wall walker, and I throw them over my T-shirts and socks into the back part of my wall locker. So then I run and I go get on the phone. I leave the phone and I go get information, come back in, and I forget about the M&Ms. I had tendonitis of my heel.
Contraband. At this point, it's contraband,
right,
folks.
Right. Which
like,
is
like a damn bag of marijuana at this point. It's the same power.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like a dime bag of marijuana in high school at this point, right now.
So I you know, we had at OCS, you get like Sunday afternoon off, and I had this little handheld, it wasn't a video game. It was one of those EA Sports games where you played with your thumb, and it was a little dot on a football field, and it was just stupid. But
I know.
So I had it, and I'd thrown that in my footlocker. So I have to go to sick bay to go get Motrin for the tendonitis in my Achilles heel. we're humping out, we're going to learn how to dig a fighting position in the defense, hump out with our camp stools, sit in the snow and rain, watch it, blah, 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 we hump back. And as we're humping back in by the ropes at OCS, I see the first sergeant, and he calls Staff Sergeant Craig Timberlake, and he says something to him. So we get back to the squad bay, and
General Timberlake?
Yeah, he's my platoon sergeant. So we started off with 66 dudes and graduated 22. And, you know, it was like people were leaving all the time. Anyway, and he was a maniac. I mean, physically fit, and he took no shit, man. He was we graduated the fewest number by far in that. In fact, I heard there was an investigation afterwards. I don't know if that's true or not. But anyway, he gets us all down in the classroom, right? So by now, by November, like we had, I don't know, we started with 66. So there's racks the whole length of the. This is the old style squad bay, right? Now we're like a third of the way down there. And so in the other end, it's the classroom. There's footlocker. Everybody in the classroom. So we're like, everybody's standing. He goes, and he starts talking about integrity, right? And we're all
like, you know something about that.
I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he said, somebody left their wall locker open today. And guess, you know, we talk about integrity all the time, right? And he's up there like just about, and I'm like, okay, whatever. And all of a sudden, he throws this bag of M&Ms. He had ripped open one end of it, and he goes, "This is what is gotten you." And right, this is Friday. So Thanksgiving was Thursday, Friday, Saturday morning, right? Always inspection, right? At OCS,
right?
So everybody's been ironing their shit, right? Folding it, ironing it, labeling it, all that bullshit. Some guys had two sets. The smart guys did, right? And so he throws these M&Ms everywhere. M&Ms go flying. And he goes, "McNamara." He goes, "Contraband search. Everybody dump all your shit from your footlocker onto your rack and open up your wall lockers." And I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to annihilate the squad bay, right? And I've got that video game in my wall locker.
Game Boy thing, yeah. Yeah, you're done.
So what?
Frame somebody, quick.
So, Mike, what happens on top of the contraband if he finds the video game?
Yeah. Dude, like I said, people that haven't been in the Marine Corps, at this point, I'm telling you, this is no different than getting caught with like a dime bag of marijuana in high school.
Yeah.
It's going to go down the same way.
Okay,
so
Mike, what would you, faced with a similar situation, you're dumping your footlocker onto your rack, okay? I keep looking at my kids going, I'm so sorry. They're like, fuck it, Mac. He was going to find something, so don't worry about it. And then there's guys like stuffing donuts in their mouth that they have in their wall locker. Okay, so if you're me, what do you do with the little Game Boy thing?
I would start trying to eat it. Piece by piece.
I stuffed it.
Or
I stuffed,
if it's small enough, I would stuff it up my ass.
I stuffed it down my pants. I'm like, there's no way.
I would do something, man.
There's no way I'm going out like this. I stuffed this thing down my pants. He rips my shit apart and throws it everywhere. And he does that with everybody's shit. I mean, and then later on.
He never caught it, though.
No. Fuck no, man. He's yelling at me, and I'm just thinking, thank God, thank God, thank God.
Yeah. Thank God. Desperate times, desperate measures, man.
Exactly. And so they leave, and I just walk out in the middle. I'm like, hey, man, I'm sorry. And Dave Ellis, who's from Florida, played at Florida State. He played defensive line. There's a big dude. He goes, fuck it, Mac. And with that, he pulls a donut out of someplace. He goes, they didn't find this. And he starts eating the donut. He said, it could have happened to any of us. You knew that he was going to rip our shit up just so we'll stay up all night tonight. And I'm like, yeah, man. And then Timberlake is like in my face. He goes, next week you can DOR. You're leaving. I'm like, no, platoon sergeant. Ken, it's not leaving. He goes, McNamara. You're leaving. So then Sunday morning, I get up and go to church. I'm going to go to church where they can't fuck with you, so you go. I walk into breakfast, and you don't have to go to breakfast Sunday morning. It's church and all that at OCS. So who's the guy in front? Who's the guy in the chow hall line right as I walk through the door? Who's
Timberlake.
And now I can't turn around. My whole being goes, woo! Right? And, I gotta be a man. So I go grab a tray and I say, good morning, platoon sergeant. He looks at me and he says, fuck you, McNamara. And I'm thinking, you know, I never really associated those two salutations before in my life. And,
yeah.
And he says,
those are terms of endearment in the Marine Corps.
He says, you're going to DOR for me. And I said, I'm not platoon sergeant. He said, yes, you are. And I said, no, I'm not platoon sergeant. And it just the whole way through that chat line, he's on my ass. You're going to DOR for me. You're going to make my week, McNamara. He called me McNamara. You're going to DOR for me. And so then he eats. Mike, when you're, like, panicked like that, how fast can you eat, like, two pancakes and three pieces of bacon?
You make a pancake sandwich with the eggs and the bacon in the middle and take it down in three bites. I've done that before.
I ate that shit
and
so fast.
The gravy for dipping sauce, yeah. Pancake sandwich, boys.
And he looks at me and says, where are you running to, McNamara? And I said, I have to go to church, platoon sergeant. He said, that's not going to save you. Monday, DOR. Got it? I said, no, platoon sergeant. So and here's the other one that I'll never forget. We're outside the chow hall, and it's raining, right? So we got our ponchos on, and we're getting ready to go to dinner. And the other platoons are kind of marching in. And so Timberlake is, I can't remember, it might have been one of the other sergeant instructors, but one of them, you can, and this is, I have to tell the story because it will help you understand the panic. He's a black Marine, right? So he's standing there and he says, hey, study your knowledge. Okay. Right. So that means you get out your candidate regs, which is your knowledge, and you're sitting there like with your face, with them in front of your face. Okay.
Right.
And so somebody says, you know, puts their hand up or something and says, sergeant instructor, could I ask you a question? And the sergeant instructor said, ax me, like A-X-M-E, ax me. And,
right.
And somebody else went, and,
oh. I knew Timberlake is an officer, and, yeah, that was one of those non-starter men.
So I remember thinking, oh, my God, please don't let him hear that. Right? Somebody laughed when he said axe. And then all of a sudden his head popped up, and this sergeant by the name of Harrison, white dude standing next to the platoon, his head snaps, and he says, what the fuck was that? And, like, dead silence. I'm like, somebody please own up to this.
Sir, this candidate ate a mosquito.
Exactly.
Dragonfly flew in my mouth, yeah.
Somebody make an excuse and lie your ass off. And so
take the punishment and move.
I can't remember, but I think Timberlake was there, and he turns and he says, what the fuck was that? And Harrison says, I think one of these college boys think you're stupid. And then Timberlake says, what? Yeah. Somebody said axe, and these college boys think that you're a stupid motherfucker. And I remember they're going, no, this can't be happening. And then Timberlake says, and I'll never forget, I'm the stupid motherfucker. We're going to find out who the stupid motherfuckers are. Put your knowledge away.
I would jump right out and say, sure, this side is stupid. You know, because it's so much better to take, yeah.
No, we were all, everybody, Mike, everybody was terrified of him. Like the sergeant instructors, not so much, because they were around you more. Timberlake literally scared the shit out of everybody. No, so nobody said a word. And so put your knowledge away. That goes away. Take your ponchos off. Ponchos, you know, get rolled up, stuffed in a cargo pocket. Platoon, now we're supposed to be going to chow. forward march, right? Right.
Yeah.
And now, double time. Marine Corps. Now we go up in the hills behind the Chow Hall. Okay. And there's this concertina obstacle that goes uphill that you low crawl underneath uphill.
Right.
Now it's raining and shitty and snowy, wet in Quantico, just nasty. We did that for probably close to an hour with him at the top saying, who's the stupid motherfucker to every person as you came up? McNamara, who's the stupid motherfucker? I am, Platoon Sergeant.
I am, Platoon Sergeant.
You're right, McNamara, again. And we did that, I mean, just filthy. And then, with 15 minutes before Chow ends, and he forms us up, we go back in, we go, he gets us in front of him, he goes, everybody has 3 minutes to eat. Got it? You're going to eat a full meal, you're going to eat it in 3 minutes, and you're going to get the fuck back out here. So you can imagine, just honestly, in your world, this is catastrophic, bad shit is happening. And so, and we're just filthy. And so we eat, we go back. Now we go inside our squad bay and it gets filthy. And so we're field daying that all night. We got to go back and field day to Chow Hall because he nastified that. It was.
Yeah, it's fun though, man. It's fun. At the time, even though your pain is suffering through it, you're looking back at it, you're like, that wasn't so bad. It really wasn't. It sucked, but it was, you look back and you're like, man, that was funny. And then, even towards the end, nothing they could do at that point. It was like, so we used to volunteer, just towards the end. We'd walk up there and, pound on the hatch. Sir, request permission to speak. Speak, private. Sir, this private requests permission to get thrashed and killed in the quarterdeck. Get the hell away from me, boy. He'd go run back. You'd ask, sir, this private requests to get thrashed and killed. He hasn't been thrashed and killed in the last 3 days. Get away from me, private.
I got caught bad-mouthing the company commander. We're cleaning rifles, Mike, and I've always hung out with kind of the borderline criminals. So it's like me and my criminal borderline criminal friends were like, we learned don't get near the entrance, go back by the corner. So we've got a footlocker in the middle of us. We've got our cloths, everybody got a little piece of it, right? That we're cleaning our rifles with. But I'm stupid, and so my back would be to the hatch. So I got my head down. I don't know. I'm cleaning my bolt or something like that, and we were talking about something. Now, unbeknownst to us, Timberlake came in, and he hung a left right at the door, walks behind the wall lockers, and he's just walking down, and then he sees us, and then he walks between two racks, and he's behind me, but I don't see him. I got my head down, and we were talking about our company commander. And so I'm like, yeah. Fucking Major Tracy, man. The guy looks like Simon Bar Sinister, and I make some comment, and nobody says anything. And I look up, and I see the looks on their face, and I'm like, what the fuck? And with that, I hear, McNamara, do you know what treason is? I'm like, treason? Treason? Report to the platoon commander. So my platoon commander was a captain by the name of Tom Rankin. He's a recon guy. He's a good dude. But anyway, I go, I have to go report to him. Bam, bam, bam on his hatch. And he's in there in his PT gear. What? Report. I go get on his yellow footprints. Candidate McNamara reporting to the platoon commander as ordered. What did you do? The candidate. And then Timberlake comes in. And he's like, when they're a quarter of an inch from your face screaming at you? He's like, he's yelling treason and insubordination and all this other shit. And so Rankin looks at me and goes, what were you doing? And he says, and so I'm standing there, and I said, the candidate was cleaning his gun. And then Rankin's got a clipboard in his hand, and he looks at me and goes, we've got a gun on in the squad bay? What, like a 16-inch gun? What the fuck are you talking about? And I said, I mean my rifle, sir. And with that, he throws his clipboard at my head, right? I move, and it goes sailing past me, and now Timberlake screams for breaking the position of attention. Oh, my God. He wore my shit out, man. He wore my shit out. Oh, man. But you're right. It was funny.
Yeah.
I finally get back to the squad mate. My friends are looking at me, and they're laughing. They're going, yeah, I might get. Never sit with your back to the hatch, boys.
No, yeah, you learned that real quick.
Oh, my God. Here's an email. When your fucking gear guard, your relief finally shows up and you dash to the line and they start screaming at everyone to get on the road and you're just getting your seat. To this day, I eat like I'm still at OCS. 30% of my tray was covered in coleslaw from the salad bar. You know, it is, though. It's amazing. I don't eat like that anymore. That
we didn't get to serve ourselves.
Yeah, I don't. No, he's Ohio man. He's not a young. He's like an 80s guy. So I don't know. I don't remember.
And even then, you guys had to serve yourself? Yeah, I didn't remember having a salad bar.
I don't.
He got a sidestep.
I don't think we had a salad bar. In 1983, we weren't into eating healthy. You just left stepped through the
and people slapped the shit on your tray and you sat down and ate.
Yeah, and you sat down and ate. So I didn't.
I think the only time you were on your own was if you go get a drink. And God forbid you got soda. It was milk or water was the beverage of choice in boot camp. There was no sodas. There was no Gatorades back when I went through, or Powerades. It was milk
water.
Or soda, or like a punch.
No,
punch.
And yeah, there was water, and then, you know, but the Marine Corps was still doing water discipline, you know? We didn't know that hydration was a good thing.
We didn't drink a lot of water at boot camp, man. I mean, you learned. We carried one canteen on our hip when it was hot in the summertime. Butter nap, man. You were like,
don't drink too much, boys. Anybody need salt tablets? Right? The exact wrong thing. Anything, like, anybody need salt tablets, let us know. They'll keep you from cramping up. All right, boys, here you go. Here's some more salt. I got an email. Mac, curious about if the Gunners watched the Vietnam series and what his thoughts are.
Yeah, I tell Mac, I watched episode 3, River of Styx, the other night, and I was really impressed of how they did this one. I mean, you've seen a lot of Vietnam stuff, and it was really kind of a weird, abstract viewpoint, and I was kind of surprised they had, Caputo on there?
Yeah.
You know, as a guest. I'm not a big Caputo fan because, you know, what was that movie with Tom Cruise? Born on the 4th of July, right? Is that one of his films?
I'm not sure.
That's a bullshit film. And I don't care who you think you are. You know, he writes it from his perspective of being a Marine. It's like one of those things of, you know, the Marine Corps Lance Corporal sees the world differently than everybody else. You know, so sometimes you may not be getting the best viewpoint. So what his assumption of the world was at the time, I'm not a big fan of. And I don't like guys like that, you know, that are making money now off of other people, you know, tragedies and things, shit like that. So I'm not a big Philip Caputo fan.
Right.
Never had been.
So talk to me about whether you...
But overall?
Yeah, overall impression of the series. Cause again,
overall, I was really, really impressed. I really, really like it. It's, like I said, extremely well done. Kind of interesting to see, you know, some of those highlight reels. You know, the Hal Moore thing was really kind of interesting. You know, it's frustrating, as I can imagine. You know, you look at this and you sit there and you say to yourself, why was Washington calling the shot? You know? why didn't we invade the North? Why didn't we bomb the living shit out of the North? Well, because the Chinese had 320,000 troops there, which I didn't know. Hmm. We didn't want, you know, to hurt any Chinese. It's just, don't go.
And less than 10 years, previous to that, or about 10 years previous, in the early part of the war, the Chinese had come across the Yalu.
The whole war.
Right. The Chinese had come across the Yalu River when we did something that they didn't particularly care for. So that was real. And then on the other side, there's...
Find out. Yeah.
On the other side, there's this whole domino, thing that they're dealing with. The Soviet Union and Eastern Europe now is all communist. During World War II, we thought, you know, Chiang Kai-shek was going to be the guy in China. He gets booted by Mao. China goes communist, right? Laos, Cambodia, they go communist. This whole domino thing that was happening, you know, and how would the United States respond to it? So that's out there. Nobody knows what the fuck to do, but there's a line drawn in the sand at Vietnam, and now we're going to deal with it. So it's fucked up.
And again, it's one of those, when you find out early on in the stages of the birth of Vietnam that, you know, Mao was a big U.S. Constitution guy. He's Thomas Jefferson, you know, Woodrow Wilson. And to think that if we would have stepped in and helped them just get rid of the French, they wouldn't have been communists. They went communist just to get, you know, the power and the influence to get rid of these, you know, people that were basically enslaving them. And we turned our backs on them. But we had the opportunity to never have a Vietnam War. Yeah. You know, but we don't learn from that shit. That's the problem. So
we thought we had to throw in with the French, our ally.
Yeah, but people get upset and they go, oh yeah, but you're looking through the focal lens of hindsight, you know, and that's always 2020 and it's always gonna if you do not learn from history, you're doomed to repeat those mistakes in the future. And so there's very similar things that are happening in the world today that are very similar to the way we handled Vietnam. And we did the same damn thing.
What do you mean? Rumsfeld did it with Iraq.
Yeah, we punted the can down the road until we couldn't punt it anymore. And then we had to deal with the shit sandwich. And then you're trying to get everybody to take a bite of it. And then you're the guy with warm water trying to get it down, because you're the only person there.
Two more emails. Mac, will you please play the audio from the Road to 9/11 that you guys have been talking about? Okay, I can't do it today. I will try to find it for tomorrow. Yeah, you can thank Mike for doing that. Mac, Modern Marine Exhibition is going on now.
Going on right now. Yep.
And I read that the Marine Corps is looking at a smaller version of the Sig Sauer P320. What does the gunner know about that?
The gunner doesn't know anything about it, but they are looking at a replacement for a pistol. And, you know, at least some smart guys are saying we're not jumping on that sinking freaking boat that the Army just built. You know, so they're going to do it right. We'll figure it out. Right now, the Marine Corps uses Glocks. You know, they've issued Glocks to a lot of reconnaissance and MARSOC units. They use Glock 19.
Well, that's not the Marine. That's not the Marine Corps, though. We're talking about the rest of the Marine Corps. The big buy.
Yeah, the big buy is going to be, it'll be screwed up. You know, because there's a lot of things play into. It's my whole rant about, you know, the Beretta, and you look at the decocking lever, and everybody calls that a safety. It's got a red little dot on it. And, you know, when you see red, you're dead. It's a decocking lever, you idiot. You know? It's not a safety. Your safety is your finger and your brain, if you have one. Your brain tells your finger not to pull the trigger, and it does it. If you're an idiot, your finger just pulls trigger without being, you know, and then you do that, oh, well, the weapon just went off. No, you're an idiot. But we're going to build some gun that's never going to be designed to kill somebody, because that's the way it's going to be written. It's going to be so safe, and it's going to have so many levers on it and so many, you know, catching devices without ever, never once considering the fact of, hey, why don't we hold the individual Marine responsible for his stupid actions?
Mike.
Whoa, that's kind of way out there, Gunner.
Mike, let me just tell you, the United States Navy, for the first time in its history, has turned on their transponders in commercial shipping lanes and near commercial shipping lanes. So
first time ever.
What does that tell you? Are we into fixing problems and getting to do what we do? I know.
What that tells me is the easy. People always tell me, like, "Oh man, that's easy." No, it's not. Easy is not easy. Easy is hard. Hard is impossible. Look at the world around us. Tell me someone that does something and it's easy and they do it well. No one. No one does easy. Easy is hard. Hard is impossible. And impossible is unattainable. So when you see that the United States Navy for the first time has decided, oh, you know what? Let's use these transponders and shipping lanes. It's probably a good idea, boys. What do you think? Everybody on board? You quiet. You're like, what? Say that again. And then people are astonished. Like, man, I'm kind of astonished. That's stupidity.
Somebody sent me an email after the show, either yesterday or the day before, and I don't have it, but I'll paraphrase it. This is going to be awesome. Oh, I think it was yesterday because I played about 40 minutes of the Senate Armed Service Committee hearing. If you haven't listened to that, go on the into the podcast page of All Marine Radio and listen to it. It's the last 40 minutes.
Yeah.
When one senator essentially looks at the CNO and SecNav and says, he doesn't say fuck, but essentially looks at him and says, how the fuck can this happen? How many radars do you have? How many people on the bridge? How does this happen? And then how does it keep happening? And then they both say, we don't know where the investigations are going
to. We'll get back to it.
And so, but it's pretty pointed questioning. Of the 2+ hours of it, it's the most direct. But the email said this. Okay, so let me get this straight. Now we're going to turn on our transponders. Anybody with the program can see where our vessels are. And now when some fucking terrorist smokes with a Cessna full of explosives or some other bullshit, then what are we going to say? That's probably why the Navy never turned them on, so that these people could never know where we were, because they are targets in international waters. They're targets in ports overseas. Does that make sense now? And then it was
my point to that.
Mac, you got to be shitting me.
No, here's my point with that one. Where's my answer to that? You're a U.S. Navy warship. Defend yourself. You're not out there as a cruise ship. You're not the Carnival cruise ships going around at each port, and that's your sole mission out there. Teach your people to defend yourself. Look at threats as threats. Do something about it. I saw that too when they were like, "Well, now we turn them on, we're going to be susceptible to more terror attacks." How do you figure that? When it's both
speeding
at you,
the point is that people are going to know where you are all the time. As soon as you turn
it
on.
They know where they're at anyway.
No, they don't. How do the bad guys know where a cruiser is at any given time?
They see it.
They got to track it in the ocean. Come on.
A cruiser sitting in the middle of the Pacific, what kind of attack are we talking about? John boats full of explosives that are on a 2,300-mile trek to go get a cruiser in the Pacific Ocean?
Yeah.
Come on.
I know, it's stupid. I mean, once you turn your transponder on, people can find you.
Okay.
And that's the point. That's the only point. The point is there's a reason that the transponders have never been turned on. They're warships. We don't have this problem, and we only have this problem in one fleet in the Navy, the 7th Fleet.
Yeah, the 7th Fleet.
So
not with the 5th Fleet, not with the 3rd Fleet, the 7th Fleet. I don't get the argument. when people came back and were, well, now the transponder's gone, now we're a target. You're a target as it is.
I agree. But you're more located. You're more locatable if your transponder's on.
Oh,
everybody can see you. Not that I don't disagree with you, but I think it's a valid point. Once you turn your transponder on, everybody can see you. You're more easily located.
By who?
The bad guys.
But that's my point, Mac. The bad guys aren't in the middle of the ocean. And when you're close to land, they can see you anyway.
No, I don't think so.
You don't have a cloaking device. You're not sitting at the pier side in Oman or somewhere, and you're like, hey, we're not the U.S. Navy. Everybody knows. And, I mean, for Christ's sake, you know as well as I do. If the barbers in areas know the troop movement of every freaking unit in the area, they know where Navy ships are going. You go to 32nd Street, go into a barbershop, and ask them where the U.S. says, Comstock's at. And they'll give you the goddamn itinerary. Because they're idiots on shit talk. They post it on Facebook. It's on social website. USS Comstock in 2 weeks is going to pull and pour it into whatever. Come visit us. And now they're worried about... This gets me pissed off.
No, I think there's validity to the argument. You start squawking in the clear, What's that?
For the first time, the U.S. Navy, other than their spec war guys, are going to be in the war.
Well, okay, I'm with you. You know what, Mike? One of the things that I was that if you listen to the hearing, Admiral Richardson, John Richardson, who's the CNO now. He talked about how personal this is for him because he spent, time with these notifications, with these families and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think that, the Surface Navy, hadn't participated in the last 16
years.
They
don't have the mindset.
Of war, that it's personal now. The reason why you don't, and again, Mike, oh, shit. Okay, damn it. I'm already over time. God damn it. Mike, big deal was made in a hearing about working 100 hours a week.
Oh. Mac, we used to do that in 4 days. And if you do the math, there's not 25 hours in a day, but we would still work 100 hours in 4 days.
So I mused. I said, well, 100 hours a week, you can't expect these guys to do it. 100 hours a week translates to 10 hours a day of your own personal time, if that's what it is. And I just went through. I said, look, this is just a day for most of the people that I work with, right, up at 5:30, shower, right, shower, shave, go grab something to eat, and you're reading INSUMs and different reports, so when you go to your meetings, blah, blah, blah. If you're in an operating unit, you're up reveille, you clean up, right, you're probably rotating out the post, right, you got a full day planned of either weapons cleaning, patrolling, debrief, sandbag filling, standing post, right? And so the day between 2100, you begin to close up shop, right? You try to get in the rack maybe by 2200, 2300 to get 6 hours of sleep and get up and do it again. 7 days a week for as long as you're there. And if something's going on or something's fucked up, guess what? You're there longer. You're there even longer. So to have 10 hours a day.
Yeah, a 12-hour day would have been a great day.
Yeah, if you could work.
Up at 6, back at Saul.
Yeah, sign me up. But so the problem. This is what this is going to get to. It isn't the 100 hours a day. It's what they do in the 10 hours. And I would tell you this. In the 100 hours, most people are going to fit going to the gym or something in there because it's not an it'd be nice to do this. It's something
right.
for your
you
brain.
Need to do it.
You have to do it. Okay, but even if you don't, you have 10 hours, which means you can get off work, you can go get some kind of workout in, and you can still get 6 to 7 hours of sleep, which is, that's good living right there.
That's great living.
That's great living. And so to me, what this is going to boil down to is, right, we're all working 100 hours a week. All right, I'm watching Musselman in CIC, and he can't keep his eyes open. So I grab Musselman's supervisor and say, get him the fuck out of here. He can't do his job. Musselman gets sent out of there, and then I look at his supervisor and I say, unfuck that lad, right, Mike? And so
yeah.
Now you got staff sergeant looking for Musselman saying, why can't you stay awake? What are you doing when you get off?
Well, I go to the internet cafe, and I talk to my girl. And
then, watch TV, I'm watching season 6 of Anarchy.
Right, and then well, we're having a PlayStation football tournament, and
that's the kind of shit. So that comes to your attention, right? And so what does staff sergeant do? Muscleman, let me tell you something. You are going to get in the rack, you're going to get to sleep, and if this happens again, you're going to be officially counseled, then you're going to be NJP. Okay, and then somebody supervises that shit, okay? Hey, look, anybody who's got to be up at 05, who in here playing this fucking football tournament got to be up at 05? Okay, in the rack now, turn this shit off. That's what it sounds like. Fuck what they want, as Eric Smith told me in 2005. It's Mac. What do they want to do when they get off patrol? They want to go watch TV and play video games. What do they need to do? Debrief the patrol, clean the weapons, PM the vehicle, get something to eat, maybe ride home, and then go to sleep. My job is to give them what they need, not what they want. And that's what this will boil down to.
Right.
100 hours of work. Somebody send that fucking memo to the Marine Corps.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. $100 a week.
Marine Corps didn't get it. Fuck. No. But I'll tell you what, when you listen to in the hearing, 100 hours a week, we can't sustain the military doing this. I'm like, damn. Somebody tell somebody that. And then McCain says at some point, and if you deploy ships longer than 7 months, no wonder everybody's getting out. Wait a minute. Well, Senator, if we had more fucking ships, I wouldn't have to keep deploying them for 7 months.
Right. They're the ones that made the deployment schedule the way it is.
Yeah.
So you got to have X amount of ships and X amount of sea lanes doing this. Okay. And it's a math problem. Okay. That requires this many ships.
Right.
And then when you get these many problems, because they're all levied upon you by the U.S. government, and you can't meet them. And then the government says, why can't you meet them? Well, because you don't have enough shit. Aren't you have enough shit? Because you didn't authorize the buy of the last one. Why didn't I authorize the buy? I don't know.
No, but I'll tell you what.
Yeah, to me there.
It's interesting. But to Richardson's credit, what he said is this is going to come down to a operating system operator function and a basic seamanship function. There aren't larger issues in terms of going to sea and not running into other ships. They're not larger than that. And we'll get to the bottom of this, and we're gonna fix it. And so hats off to him. He was very candid, but so interesting. But I thought you'd get a chuckle out of 100 hours a week. That was pretty funny. And again, and you're talking about when you're at sea underway. Okay, but how long does a ship stay at sea? 7 straight months? No, fuck no. A month? Go back into port? Yaha time? Then we go back out to sea, we operate? So it ain't all that. It ain't all fucking that. And when we talk about being forward deployed, they mean they're in Japan. So how much are you at sea? Oh, I don't know.
When we're forward deployed, you're in Camp Dwyer, Afghanistan, which ain't a bad place in Afghanistan.
No,
but some units are forward deployed in Kenny Cashel, which is a shithole in Afghanistan.
Right. Right. That's forward deployed. So when you're in Japan and you're going out 3 weeks, right, out of the month, maybe. And when you're out at sea, you're working 15-hour days. Come on, man, that's bullshit. And you can't stay awake and not run into somebody? So, anyway, interesting. All right, man. Anything else on the agenda today?
No, going to lunch with some buddies and Chris Kyle's parents are going to be there. So, I'm going to
Have you ever met him?
No, I've never met Chris Kyle's parents.
All right. Well, have a good lunch.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah, so, all right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye, bud. There you have it. Michael Musselman here. We're too late. This is ridiculous. Working 3 hours and 20 minutes this morning. Unbelievable. All right, my thanks to Ken Rogers for introducing me to Mike Archer, who was on this morning. My thanks to Mike Archer for coming on. And talking about his career as a Marine, his time at KSON, and his thoughts on PBS, the series. So it's a big deal for those of you who don't know. I mean, if you've been listening, you do. But, you know, the community of Vietnam veterans, it's a big deal. So, and Burns doesn't have an easy task. And I think, to his credit, I mean, I haven't seen anything too inflammatory. But I believe, based on what I've seen, and I'd have to go back and see it again, see parts of it again. I think Robert McNamara has been treated with kid gloves. And so, but I'd have to go back and see things. Because sometimes you don't focus on things they say that you simply take as facts. But anyway, it's on again tonight. PBS, take a look at it. That'll do it. This program repeats itself momentarily. So if you're just joining us, don't touch that dial. It's an entertaining program, folks, just so you know. Tomorrow, I think the All Marine Radio Chef's going to join us, that he'll be back. Have a great day. On a Thursday. All Marine Radio. Over and, that's right, out. Have a good one.